Hello, everybody. This is a continuation of our Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries. We're on number 42, and we've been going through the different stages of the Antikarana process, where we've arrived at what we call invocation and evocation. We've worked on projection thus far. And let us follow now what Master DK says. The three preceding stages mark, in reality, the three stages of personality work. So we can do this from the soul-infused personality. Uh-huh, that's one of those ones that I want to put in there, you know, SIP. And that is the soul-infused personality. Okay. Relatively soul-infused anyway. We've been told that we draw upon the power of the jewel and the lotus and the power of the general will residing within the soul. The remaining three are expressions of response, or let us call it evocation, from the higher levels of the spiritual life. Beyond indicating them, there is very little that I can put into words, well, naturally enough, because this is out of the control, of the personality per se. Okay, let's see where we are. Out of the control of the personality. Okay. The task of invocation based on intention, visualization, and projection has been carefully, you know, step by step at first, undertaken by the disciple, and he has at least some measure of clear perception as to the work he has done by the dual means of spiritual living and scientific occult work. Well, we're not going to get by without either one of those if we simply try scientific occult work without spiritual living. We'll be in trouble. Nothing will happen. So without spiritual living, scientific occult work will not work. He has, therefore, he is therefore himself invocative, and I suppose this means even without the occult work, he will be invoking his higher nature. His life is life effect is registered upon the higher level of consciousness, levels of consciousness, and he is recognized as a point of invocative tension. This is perhaps what the way we are looked at by the members of the hierarchy. If we have succeeded in really living the invocative life and the good life, and also good in the spiritual sense, and good and proper from the point of view of our scientific technique. This tension and this reservoir of living energy, that's related to the first stage of intention, which is the disciple himself. And that is so interesting, is not just what we have, but what we become, what we are, is set in motion by projected thought, the use of the will, and a sounded word or phrase of power. So, in other words, this, let's just say, the stage of projection involves projected thought and a word of power. And this is another one of those ones which had been in the other, and which I would like to, whoop, that won't work. Excuse me for a second here. WOP, word of power. Okay. We'll put that in. And word of power. Oh, yes. Okay. A word or phrase of power. Now, These are given to us in fairly symbolic form, and perhaps the original is not exactly given to us, or the mode of pronunciation not yet at any in any case. Okay, the result is that his developed potency and its radius of influence are now sufficiently strong to call out a response from the spiritual triad. So this is a certain amount of real tension is needed in order to do this. This is a, let's call this okay. Excuse my little wanderings here. sufficiently strong, let's call it a sufficient point of tension to call out a response from the spiritual triad. On the higher levels, really it's a response of the monad working through its personality, or that which is the equivalent of personality, the spiritual triad. There is then a going forth towards the aspect of the Antikarana constructed by the disciple, along with along which the life of the soul and body can travel. This is a very important statement, and we may visualize higher aspects of the Antikarana, but the real Antikarana is being built from above as well. Is being built from above as well. The Father, let's look at this again. There is then a going forth towards the aspect of the Antikarana constructed by the disciple. Now, in a way, this is particularly the link between the mental unit and the monastic permanent atom. Now, those are definitely ones we want, so let's put them in, MU, and that will stand for mental unit. Okay. And then the MPA, well, we have to get all those permanent atoms in there, don't we? I think so. MPA, which is the monastic permanent atom. We have to get all of those permanent atoms abbreviated. The real Antikarana is built from above as well. The life of the soul, the life of consciousness, and the energies of the body gathered up into that point of tension. Let's put that down. Gathered up into the point of tension. I have to pretty well into the point of tension. Okay. Outline these things so we don't forget. There was then a going forth towards the aspect of the Antikarana constructed by the disciple. Now, that first part of construction is very much the monastic permanent atom, and the link between the monastic permanent atom. Everything else is related to the Buddhic permanent atom and the Atmic permanent atom, and is pretty well what you would say visualized. The Father, that is the monad, working through the thread, and it's a thread which is projected up into the monad, and which also is reinforced by a going forth. In other words, it's a legitimate thread from above, a thread of, a triple thread, really. It's life, it's consciousness, it's creativity. The Father of the monad, working through the thread, now goes forth to meet the Son. The soul, enriched by the experience of personality life in the three worlds. And the Son, let's call it, this is the rising aspect, okay? So this is the rising aspect, and we, as the soul-infused personality, are considered the sun. Okay? The sun enriched by the experience of the personality life in the three worlds. And from the higher levels of responsive projection of energy, so there is projection from above, is sent forth that which will eventually make contact with the lower projection. Now we kind of wonder about that word eventually, you know, how long is really involved in this eventuality. Thus is the Antikorana built. So there is significant projection from above, which is an evocation of the invocation from below by the soul-infused personality. And this is one of those words, we always used to get it in the arcane school. The tension of the lower evokes the attention of the higher. And, you know, more than that even, not only the attention, but a considerable response. Let's see. I want to get that clear and see how long it will take. Okay. Yeah, there we go. The tension of the lower evokes the attention of the higher. It's projective, evocative response. This is the technical process of invocation and evocation. You do have to demand, you do have to ask, you do have to send up a higher type of, ascend into the heights or into the higher vibratory places, a vibratory demand. So one must set up a vibratory demand first. And, you know, that's an opportunity to write in a couple of more abbreviations. Wish there was a way that I could transfer these to you, so that you could use them in your own research. And I do have, you know, a very extensive AAB extracts document, but it's rather hard to send. It's got about 7,000 files in it, and it just needs the right way to do it. Okay, so this is the technical process of invocation and evocation. There is a gradual approach from both the divine aspects. So what he's telling us is the bridge is not built overnight. Little by little. And I suppose that, you know, it really can take years in what we're doing here. Little by little, the vibration of both becomes stronger reciprocally, and each is invoking and eventually, let me get this correct, evoking the other. Each is invoking and evoking the other. Okay, so there's going to be that this is a very important sentence. There comes then a moment of contact, a moment when contact between the two projections is made in meditation. Again, we cannot expect this to be overnight. This will not be immediate, but it will be noticeable. Okay, so let's just say very noticeable. And there will be an energetic difference. So again, there comes then a moment. See, the increase of vibration reciprocally, the approach and the swinging into each other's field of vibration of each of these lines. There comes then a moment when contact between the two projections is made in meditation. This is not a contact between soul and personality, which is the goal of the average aspirant, and note this well. but a contact between the fused soul and personality energy and the energy of the monad. So, you know, who can work at building the antikarana? Let us say the soul-infused personality, at least partially. And the energy of the monad. So, but a contact between the fused soul and personality. So we have to invoke the will aspect of the soul. We have to invoke the power of the jewel in the lotus, which is really the center of monadic will within the egoic lotus. And B, at least significantly soul-infused personality before we can project in such a way that the tension of the lesser will evoke the attention and evocative response of the greater. So I'm repeating these things, you know, partially for myself, just to make sure they really make their, that dent. Master Moria says, when you want to impress something on yourself, you know, press the bridge of your nose, he says, when you're trying to impress a point upon your brain. So this is not a contact between soul and personality, the goal of the average aspirant, but a contact between the fused soul and personality energy and the energy of the monad working through the spiritual triad. And remember, let us say that this is the personality of the spiritual triad. Monad. This does not constitute a moment of crisis, but is in the nature of a flame of light, a realization of liberation, and a recognition of the esoteric fact that a man is himself the way. Well, think about what that does that mean. You know, we are, we are the monad in extension, or even the universal logos. That's one of those words we definitely want, don't we? I think so. Universal logos. We are the universal logos in extension. And all the way along that extension, that is our identity. Our identity exists all along the emanation from the highest source, the universal logos. Yeah, so let's just see. IDN, we'll call that identification. Hopefully I do this correctly and don't bore you to death while I'm in the process. And ID, we're going to call this identity. And why we are at it, we might as well do IDF, which is identify. Okay. So, we are the monad in extension, or even the universal logos. In extension. Our identity exists all along the emanation from the highest source, comma, the universal logos. There is no longer the sense of personality and soul or of ego and form, but simply the one. Now, this is, the kind of realization which is likely to come after the third initiation. They're simply the one functioning on all planes as points of spiritual energy and arriving at the one sphere of planned activity by means of the path of light. Now, we all have a place or a point of tension for a specific spiritual work, spiritual planned activity. So, but it is always the one. But it is always the one who is working at that specificity. Oh, these are such powerful. You know, how long one could study this, how deeply one could study this. So this is not the moment of crisis when the two portions of the bridge, one from below, one from above, swing into each other's field vibratorily and touch, but is in the nature of a flame of light, a realization of liberation. Maybe not entire liberation at first, because we're not yet to the fifth degree, and actually, what is liberation anyway? You know, it's a progressive process, and a recognition of the esoteric fact that man is himself the way, and that way is, in fact, the retracing of one's emanatory path. And I'm going to put that down. The way is the retracing of one's emanatory path. There is no longer the sense of personality and soul, or of ego and form, but simply the one. This is something we really have to do our best to grasp. Simply the one functioning on all planes as a point of spiritual energy and arriving at the one sphere of planned activity by means of the path of light. The one has, in a way, descended via the path of light. Now, these are words, and until we really meditate upon them and really work with them, they're just simply going to be words, but we have definite work to do, okay, to make these things real. In considering this process, well, he's saying it, words prove so completely inadequate. So we have to dwell with these words until that understanding or realization, that something behind the words, emerges. So let's just say realization behind the words will emerge with proper meditation and practice. And boy, there's one we definitely need, MED. That's meditation, and I'm going to make it. It's so tedious to retrace what has disappeared via computer disaster. meditate, we'll do it that way, and we'll do it this way. MEDN, meditation. All right. So, at this stage, when very advanced, there is no form attracting the monad outward into manifestation. So the five lower planes, which are the Brahmic planes, are not attractive to the monad. The five lower planes are not attractive to the monad. There is no way in which the call of matter. And what is matter, after all? The entire cosmic physical plane, in a way, is material, and especially the lower five planes, the call of matter, let's call it this way, the lower five planes of the cosmic physical plane, and there's another one that we definitely want. Okay, and cosmic physical plane. There's no way in which the call of matter or of form can evoke a response from the monad. Such a call would be to limit the monad, and once the monad has completed its journey, there's no reason that it must submit itself to that type of limitation once again. Okay. Okay, there's no way in which the call of matter or of form can evoke response from the monad because this is the end of the pilgrimage, the journey. There, especially when we re-become the monad by focusing as a Chohan within the monadic vehicle. Of course, it's the it's the ending of the lower journey. It's not really the end of the entire journey. When does that end? That's a definite universal process. There remains only the great pull of the consciousness of humanity as a whole, and to this response can be made via the completed Antikarana. Oh, this is so good. So the bodhisattvic impulse is still there. The bodh, how do I spell that? Bodhisattvic impulse is present, and the urge or pull to redeem human consciousness. Bodhisattvic. Let's assume that that is something we can add to the dictionary. Okay. Down or rather across this bridge, descent can be made at will. That is, I suppose, once one has passed the fourth degree, in order to serve humanity and carry out the will of Shambhala. So initiates of the fourth, the fifth, the sixth degree can descend via this bridge of light. This is a statement of the final consummation. I mean, you know, we do not expect that we can reach this point of consummation at this time. But before that can take place in its perfect completion, there must be a long period of gradual approach between the two aspects of the bridge. And maybe, well, maybe we can somehow hasten this a little by not only imagining the projection from above, but the responsive projection from below. We can imagine responsive, evocative projection from above also. The higher emanating from the spiritual triad. So we have to have what you would call, you know, divine expectation will help. Emanating from the spiritual triad in response to the monadic impulse, and the lower emanating from the personality aided by the soul across the chasm of the separating mind. Wow. All right. You know, this is so excellent that we really must, we really have to get this. So before this final consummation can take place, there must be a long period of gradual approach of the two aspects of the bridge. So, you know, faithful practice of this. Nothing will eventuate if we do not practice this in a frequent daily manner. The higher emanating from the spiritual triad in response to monadic impulse. So let's remember the monad is involved in this dual bridge building from the first, and the lower emanating from the personality aided by the soul, which is infusing the personality across the chasm of the separating mind. And there are four mental subplanes. Okay. Well, I'll just say, put that in. Mental subplanes. Finally, contact between that which the monad projects and that which the disciple is projecting is made, and then comes the fifth and sixth stages. So let's remember the soul-infused personality is the lower, let's call it projector, And the monad working through the spiritual triad is the higher projector. When we realize how much of all this is handled outside the range of our will, then we have tremendous respect for this natural, supernatural, inherently spiritual process in which we must participate. And we do understand the responsiveness of the higher powers to our invocations. We have to ask, you know, ASK. Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall find, and knock and it shall be opened to you. And each one of those, involves, you know, there's sound, there's sight, and there's the action of the fist. The first, second, and third aspects of divinity are all involved. So, let's pause just for a moment here. Okay, well, you know, one feels one should read that over again and over again, because there are certain statements there that just are indispensable. There must be a long period of gradual approach of the two aspects of the bridge, the higher emanating from the spiritual triad in response to monadic impulse, and the lower emanating from the personality aided by the soul, the infusing soul, across the chasm of the separating mind. That's one of those really important ones. The other one, another one, when the two aspects of the bridge meet, it's not crisis, but a moment, but it is in the nature of a flame of light, a realization of liberation, and a recognition of the esoteric fact that a man is himself the way. I wonder how many of us realize that. And then this other sentence, the tension of the lower evokes the attention of the higher. Well, study this carefully. You know, I guess I've been at this about 40 years, studying this particular process. And as I read it, I'm encouraged to study yet again and attempt to apply yet again. The disciple himself is a point of invocative tension. Have we become that? Okay. What's required? Not only spiritual living, but spiritual, scientific, technical, occult work. All right, so he's dealing with sections of building the Antikorana, which over which the personality, even the soul-infused personality, does not have a great deal of effect. But what we do below will determine how these things work out above. So we have to certainly have a strong measure of belief here, strong measure of faith. Now, we'll continue a little here. And we're getting into these other stages of stabilization and resurrection, about which, no doubt, the Tibetan will have even less to say than he had to say about invocation and evocation. So anyway, let us proceed. The bridge is now built. And none of us can say that yet. You know, the degree to which there has been a coming forth from the higher levels of tension is probably, in our case, very variable and the kind of thing that would even suggest a flame of light and realization is probably relatively infrequent, but we have been given the scientific occult method of guaranteeing that it will occur. The bridge is now built, thin and tenuous. Maybe it's strands at the beginning. I suppose it's strands of light, but how they are related, how the elements, what do we call it, the constituents, maybe that's a better word, constituents of the bridge are related, we do not yet know. And maybe if we were a cult scientist on the fifth ray, we would have to find that out. But for people like ourselves, it's a question of getting it to work properly so we can take advantage of input from the higher worlds. Thin and tenuous, maybe it strands at the beginning, but time and active understanding and notice, not just, you can't just do something thoughtlessly. The active understanding has to be there so that when you encounter some response, you'll have an idea of what it means and you'll work knowingly, understanding the process. But time and active understanding will slowly weave thread after thread until the bridge is finished, stable and strong, and capable of being used. So, you know, to what extent maybe it is variable in its effectiveness when it when the strands are thin and few. But later, when the bridge is finished, it will be stable and strong, and will be a trustworthy link to the higher worlds of liberation. Okay, so the bridge must be used. It must perforce be used because there is no other medium of intercourse between the initiate and the one who he now knows himself to be. So I'm thinking, saying the causal body is now destroyed and cannot reach the monad. Only the bridge of the soul infused personality can reach the monad, who is the one whom the initiate knows himself to be. Okay. He ascends in full consciousness into the sphere of monadic life. And that is, of course, the monadic vehicle. He is resurrected. Now, you know, the true resurrection is the seventh initiation. But even then, if we are uplifted into the sphere of monadic life at the sixth initiation or so, it's still a kind of resurrection, isn't it? He ascends in full consciousness into the sphere of monadic life. He is resurrected from the dark cave of personality life into the blazing light of divinity, as perceived within the monad. He is no longer a part of humanity, you know. They are no longer men as are the masters, but having reached beyond that stage, have linked themselves to the great council in the highest secret place. In other words, these are Chohans, we might say. And so initiates of the sixth degree are no longer men as are the masters. Oh, how do I get that one? All right, I'll get that one by just doing a capital M, S, 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 and those are the masters. Okay. Well, all of this is far ahead, but having a proper sense of the direction in which we're going can rightly motivate us at the stage at which we find ourselves. So he ascends in full consciousness into the sphere of monadic life. What an objective. And one which really must take place beyond the fourth, beyond the fifth initiation even, but already we have hints at the fourth and fifth initiation of what this can be like, because we have a much more direct impression from the monad. He ascends in full consciousness into the sphere of monadic life. He is resurrected from the dark cave of personality life, which we probably don't even realize what a dark cave, what a darkened chamber we are in our personality life, into the blazing light of divinity. He is no longer a part of humanity. Well, what kingdom? He's the kingdom of souls, and he's even entering the kingdom of planetary lives. He is no longer only a part of humanity and a member also of hierarchy, but he belongs to the great company of those whose will is consciously divine and who are the custodians of the plan. Well, some of the hierarchical members are custodians of the plan, but that you might say here that he becomes a light who carries out the will of God. And that's another one of those ones that I think we want. Well, at least you'll know which ones I think are important, even if I'm boring you to death here by putting them in. I'm just thinking of long-term efficiency, because there's a lot to cover in this book and in the others. So there's the will of God. They are responsive to impression from Shambhala and are under the direction of the heads of the hierarchy. I suppose you could say who are these particularly, and let's call them the three great lords. And that is another one that I think we should put in, three great lords, three great lords, and that is the Manu, the Mahachohan, and finally the greatest of them, the Bodhisattva. The freedom of the three centers is theirs. What center do we mean? Of course, this naturally includes Shambhala. They can express at will the triple energy of humanity. Well, what is that? The mind, the emotions, and the body. The dual energy of hierarchy. I suppose we have there the buddhi and the manas, and the one energy of Shambhala, which is will and purpose. Such, my brothers, is the goal of the disciple as he begins to work at the building of the Antahkarana. Reflect on these matters and proceed with the work. If we could just value and cherish what DK has given, what he has given is to be cherished, understood, practiced, applied, all of these things, it will lead us to the goal. It is outstanding teaching. And maybe I once heard, I don't know, was it in the Tibetan work, or was it Mary Bailey or someone just saying, that the best teaching has been given here under the auspices of Sanatkumara by the Tibetan, a great revelation from hierarchy and even in part from Shambhala. And if we realized, if we had a really excellent sense of values, we would apply ourselves to these things in a very scrupulous manner. Here I am, 73 years old. I've been in this business a long time, in this incarnation anyway, and living the life of applied study anyway. And I'm always amazed at the opportunity that is being offered to us and the degree to which we oftentimes don't accept the opportunity, don't realize its nature until maybe regretfully it's too late and one has to start again, you know, in the next incarnation. So let us value what has been given. And here I think DK is giving us a couple of incentives, you might say, because Alice Bailey or one of the editors has appended some additional material. In some talks to disciples, the Tibetan makes the following remarks, which apply here with peculiar force. So Alice Bailey is inserting this, and I think trying to somehow evoke not only our understanding, but our applied will for an intensified life. Your major need is for an intensification of your inner spiritual aspiration. You need to work more definitely from what might be called a point of tension. Well, the whole process of the Antikarana demands working from a point of tension, right? The entire process of building the Antikarana demands working from an intense point of tension. Study what is said about tension and intensity. It is the intensity of purpose which will change you from the plodding, fairly satisfactory aspirant into the disciple whose heart and mind are aflame. Perhaps, however, you prefer to go forward steadily with no group effort, making your work for me and for the group an ordered part of the daily life, which you can adjust pretty much as you like, and in which the life of the spirit receives its reasonable share. You know, sounds a little Libran, doesn't it? In which the service aspect is not neglected and your life presentation is neatly balanced. It does sound very much like Libra and carried forward without much real strain. So, you know, DK is actually invoking in our lives the need for spiritual strain. It's not the same as, you know, making some kind of screwed up face when you are trying to achieve a point of tension. Not that. I guess we all know what strain is and how it can challenge the different aspects of our nature. When this is the case, it may be your personality choice or your soul decision for a specific life. But it means that you are not the disciple with everything subordinated to the life of discipleship. Well, there's the challenge. And only we, before the bar of our own soul, can answer whether we are the disciple with everything subordinated to the life of discipleship. And of course, this doesn't mean ignoring one's duties or the karmic presentations which show up in one's life. But it does mean a certain intensity of fire, which is under control. Doesn't mean it's burning up the neighborhood, you know, or somehow destabilizing your entire energy system. But it is fiery. It's directed. It's under purposeful, planned control, and each one of us needs to take all this as seriously as we possibly can, because the opportunity is immense and it doesn't come all the time. One has to seize opportunity when it's given, or it may be a long time before it comes again. So how to recognize opportunity? Remember the two kinds of crisis that DK talked about, you know, the crisis of opportunity earlier in the life, mostly, and then the crisis of expression. What to do with that opportunity? Well, here's some more that Alice Bailey inserts as something we should think about when following these words of Master DK about the six stages of building the Antikarana. I would like here to point out two things. First, if you can so change your tension that you are driven by the life of the spirit, it will entail a galvanic upheaval in your inner life. You know, not that we necessarily destabilize everything in our outer life. And the spirit is the monad through the spiritual triad. For this are you prepared? The question is to each one of us. Secondly, it will not produce any outer change in your environing relationships. A lot of people like to kind of tear down the whole temple, you know, when they think they're reorganizing their life, not realizing that the outer life has been organized in such a way that it's staged to bring out the right karmic response and the right dharmic response. So it will not produce any outer change in your environing relationships. We have to ponder this. Your outer obligations and interests must continue to be met. But I am talking in terms of inner orientations, dynamic inner decisions, and an interior organizing for service and for sacrifice. Well, this is an inner process which each one of us must learn to remember or recognize while maintaining the karmic and dharmic structure of our life. Perhaps you prefer the slower and easier way. Well, I'm sure there are days for all of us when that may be the case. If that is so, it is entirely your own affair, and you are still on your way. I mean, you know, it's not what DK would have for us. You are, but at least he's not dismissing it as not valuable in any respect. You are still a constructive and useful person. I am simply here facing you with one of the crises which comes in the life of all disciples, where choices have to be made for that are determining for a cycle, but for a cycle only. And this is, you know, one of those references which I always look for and frequently lose, but it's one in which all of us are called to attend, to which all of us are called to attend. It is preeminently a question of speed and of organizing for speed. Well, and of course, not the kind of speed that is careless, but the right kind of speed which attends to all necessities and yet goes faster than sort of plodding along. This means eliminating the non-essentials and concentrating on the essentials, the inner essentials, as they concern the soul and its relation to the personality, and the outer ones as they concern you and your environment. Do we truly know what are the essentials and non-essentials of our life? It can be sacrificial. You know, let's see what I've got here. This is a kind of sacrifice. Well, I think there is one we really need. We don't want to do without sacrifice, do we? So SACR, and it's a good one for sacred too, isn't it? So maybe I just should make this SAC sacrifice. SACRIFICE. Okay. It's a kind of sacrifice, and we will experience it that way because we are often attached to the many things we do, so many of which are non-essential. So quite a review of our life as it relates to the essentials and non-essentials is in order. I would give you, okay, so, and now there's a bit more here. I would give you three key thoughts for deep reflection during the next 6 months. Will you ponder on them, one each month for 3 months, within the head, and during the second 3 months, brood on them within the heart? And there's something about that word, brood. It involves warmth and patience. These three thoughts are, and I guess they operate for all of us, the need for necessity for speed, the reorganization of standards of thought and of living, so higher, let's just say, higher standards are needed. I always like to keep that little bracket, but sometimes it disappears. Higher standards are needed. And the expression of sincerity, sacrifice, simplicity, SSS. You know, this is a, let's just say, DK frequently uses mnemonics. I'm not sure. Well, maybe that's correct. Uses mnemonics to fix certain thoughts within our minds. And there's none of us that, not one of us, that could not benefit from these three: sincerity, sacrifice, and simplicity. You kind of wonder, you know, when a master gives these thoughts to you, they must make a very great impression, if one is truly alive to the possibilities, alive to the potentials. So let them sink in. Sincerity, sacrifice of the non-essentials, simplicity in clearing our way so that our way is not cluttered by non-essentials, but the simplicity has reduced our attachments only to the essentials. Much easier, I think, spoken about than accomplished. All right. Yeah, okay. So this actually is the end of that section, what Alice Bailey added. And I'm just hoping very much that this is somehow recorded. I've been having a little trouble when I write in the red. It doesn't always stay there, but it will stay there for your video. So that much is good. So this is the end of Rays and Initiation webinar commentary number 42. And the pages are, I think, 493, or is it 496? And let's see where we are. 493, I think, to 497. Okay. 497. And then beginning. Okay, let's see if we can get this correct. Beginning of Rays and Initiation webinar commentaries. Number 43, we'll start with page 496, which comes up very shortly, and we'll change this here to 496, and we'll see how far we get. So here are the instructions of one of the most advanced meditative practical techniques for uniting the apparently separated parts of the human being. The human being is not really, he doesn't really have separated parts, but they are separated in consciousness. That's the problem. So we don't really, we cannot call, using our will, call upon these different elevations of our nature. We, you know, by luck or by chance or by some spontaneous alignment, which was arrived at for reasons we don't understand, something from the higher worlds may come through, but now Master DK is trying to help us make this into a science so that it will, we can ascend, we can descend, we can invoke with the expectation of evocation, we can gradually be resurrected with conscious focus in the higher aspects of our nature without losing ability to use the lower aspects, whether they still exist naturally or are generated as a Maya Varupa, use them in the service of humanity. These are the goals, these are the possibilities, and for us is left the necessity to know, to understand, and to practice and to apply until all of this becomes a way of life and not simply some interesting occult reading. Okay, so we'll go on before long, and let's just call this the end of number 42, and we'll be going on to number 43, and we'll try to take this in. There's still many pages to go, and a discussion of the various kinds of initiation. So much in this wonderful book for us to study and assimilate. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.